Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. It's Clint Coons here with Anderson Business Advisors, and this is another Anderson podcast. And today I have Scott Hendricks, wealth manager with Accredited Investment Fiduciary Upstream Investment Partners. And Scott is an individual who I met when I was in Austin, Texas, not too long ago, teaching on asset protection topics. And he came up to me and he brought up this concept about how to save 1031 exchanges. Now, I assume that the listeners, that you all know what a 1031 exchange that allows you to defer gain on the sale of real estate. In fact, you may have caught my webinar on the qualified opportunity zones that I recently did, where we talked about another potential to defer gain from the sale of real estate. And actually, when I was putting that webinar together, you'll notice if you haven't seen it yet, in one of the slides, I discuss the differences between a qualified opportunity zone and 1031. I specifically reference Delaware statutory trust, that you need to have this in any type of 1031 exchange you're entering into, because there's just too many variables that can go wrong and leave you without a property to close into, and then hence you will have taxable gain. When I started talking to Scott, he said, you know what, Clint, there is a solution to that. Not enough people know about it. I can help your clients better understand how they can sell real estate and roll those funds into a 1031 exchange. If anything goes wrong, there's a great backup provision out there. So Scott, thanks for coming on. Why don't you introduce yourself to all the listeners?
Hello, Clint. Thank you for having me. I am, a wealth manager, a portfolio manager by day. Most of my business is traditional asset management and portfolio management. The fastest growing area of my business has been working with real estate investors, either my clients or real estate investors that I've come to know who are at a point where they've held some property for a long time. It's gone up in value over and above what they purchased it for originally, and they'd like to sell it. And obviously the 1031 exchange, the like kind exchange under that section of the tax code, is the obvious way for them to sell an appreciated property, defer both the potential capital gains tax and any depreciation clawback, or the tax on the depreciation recapture that the IRS imposes, a state capital gains tax, if they happen to be in a state that imposes such a tax. Texas does not. I know, for example, California does. And transfer those proceeds via 1031 exchange and a qualified intermediary into some other replacement property or properties. You're correct in that the Delaware Statutory Trust, though it has been around since the late 80s as a legal entity and recognized by the IRS as legitimate replacement property since 2004, it is still relatively unknown as an option for real estate investors undertaking a 1031 exchange.
Well, that's going to change today, because we're going to make sure anyone that's listening on this program knows exactly what that trust is. And so, you know, with that, before we go into that, I start talking about the 1031 exchanges and failures. And so, as you brought up, 1031 exchange is a tax deferral technique that people can sell real estate and exchange into like kind. Now, that changed, is my understanding, with the new Tax and Jobs Act, that they really tightened up what qualifies. Am I correct?
That's correct. In the Tax and Jobs Act passed into law in late 2017, all appreciated assets except real estate were ruled out or negated as a eligible transfer under Section 1031. So in the past, if you had a collection of fine art or vehicles or any kind of personal property that had an investment value, you could sell it and transfer those gains into some other asset under Section 1031. Well, that all changed in 2017, such that now only physical property, real estate, can be exchanged in a tax-deferred way under Section 1031.
Yeah, so that really now limits, you know, what people can do. And obviously, you know, in the past, people would roll into other real estate with a 1031, and that's how most individuals saw it. But they could also roll into different assets as well. And now you're just into real estate. So when you're putting these together, these 1031 exchanges, most qualified intermediaries, the exchange accommodator that someone's going to work through, you know, they really don't give people many options, do they, as far as if something goes wrong, you know, how they have a backup plan?
I find that to be the case. The role of the QI, qualified intermediary, is simply to hold the funds during the transaction. They take receipt of the funds at closing on the property that the investor wishes to sell. They hold the funds for the time period and the time limits that must be followed. And then they send the funds to the seller of the property that the investor is seeking to buy. So in effect, they act as the middleman or middle person in the exchange, a critical role. And without the role of the QI, the 1031 simply doesn't work. You had mentioned some of the potential pitfalls of a 1031. And I'd like to address really three ways that a Delaware statutory trust can not only help avoid those pitfalls, but I believe also give a 1031 exchange investor a lot of positive options. It's not just about a DST as a safety net or a fallback, but it's also about a DST expanding the range of options that a real estate investor might look at via Section 1031 exchanges. So let me back up a bit and just say what a Delaware statutory trust is. Okay. It is a legal entity that owns property. It is assembled by a sponsor. And a sponsor in this case is usually a large institutional scale real estate investor company. And I'm talking institutional scale, like they buy real estate for insurance companies. They buy real estate for university endowments or state pension plans. So they're out there buying hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, of high-grade real estate across many different asset classes. We're talking multifamily apartments, commercial office building, retail centers, retail structures, self-storage, et cetera, and incorporating this real estate, either a single property or multiple properties, into a legal entity called a Delaware statutory trust. The sponsor or the actual owner of the deed of those properties is 100% responsible for the management, the maintenance, and the upkeep of the property. That includes seeking financing to support the acquisition of the property and keeping the tenants, if there are tenants involved, keeping the property occupied and cash flowing with tenants. So once the sponsor has set up this trust, they are then able to open it up to outside investors. And because the Delaware statutory trust must already own by deed physical property within the legal structure, the IRS recognizes it as an eligible replacement property via 1031 exchange. The key difference being it is a passive investment. So for a real estate owner who wants to sell property under Section 1031, they would look at a Delaware trust, a Delaware statutory trust, or DST for short, as a passive place, park some of their money, if you will, in real estate that's managed by the sponsor of the trust, who acts as the trustee in the legal sense. The investor comes in and establishes themselves as a beneficiary to the trust and a fractional but passive owner of the property that's contained within that DST entity.
All right. Yeah. You know what? That sounds to me, when I listen to that, it sounds a lot like a REIT. And if you I would like to go into that, but we got to take a short break. So when we come back, maybe we could discuss the differences between a DST and a REIT, if that works.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
Welcome, everyone. It's Clint Kunz here. We are talking today about the Delaware Statutory Trust, and we have Scott Hendricks that has come on and is sharing some valuable information on how this is beneficial if you're involving yourself in a 1031 exchange that you need to know about this tool. So right before the break, we were discussing how the DST, or what is a DST, and Scott started talking a little bit about the basic structure, and I brought up the fact that this sounds so much like a REIT. And I thought, you know what, Scott, explain to us, you know, what is the difference between the Delaware Statutory Trust and a REIT? Because when you talked about investing into them and they're giving you an interest in it, first, that's the first thing that came to my mind.
You bet, Clint. A lot of investors know what REITs are, Real Estate Investment Trust, or REIT. Very common in the investment world. There are publicly traded REITs listed on stock exchanges. There are mutual funds, et cetera, that hold real estate investment trusts. It is another form of passive real estate ownership. However, there's a couple of important differences between a REIT and a Delaware statutory trust. First and foremost, REITs are not eligible as replacement properties under Section 1031, according to the IRS. And the key difference there is that a REIT does not necessarily have to own property at the time it is raising money from investors. It could be what's commonly called a blind pool, where a REIT has simply stated their objectives to go out and acquire property, but in the meantime, we're going to solicit funds or raise funds from investors. So because of that difference, REITs are not legally structured in a way that the IRS recognizes as actual property under management.
So it comes right to that point then, because the Delaware Statutory Trust owns the real estate, you can exchange into that, and that qualifies under 1031, but the REIT may or may not own it, so it doesn't qualify. So you shouldn't even consider then using a REIT if you're getting into a 1031 exchange, because it will not help you.
Yeah, the IRS will not recognize a REIT. If it is legally structured as a REIT, it will not recognize it as legitimate reinvestment of tax-deferred gains.
All right. So then how would someone who is considering 1031, what would you recommend how they would use the Delaware Statutory Trust, how you would see that fitting in? I mean, I have my ideas. We start talking about it, but I really want to hear from you.
Well, there are principally three ways. There are a few others that get into more specific circumstances, but the three principal ways that I talk to clients about how powerful a DST can be are as follows. One, and you've already alluded to this, because of the tight timelines involved with the 1031 exchange, namely, investors have only 45 days from the date they close on the sale of the property that they are relinquishing. Those 45 days are the window of time that an investor has to name or identify where they intend to reinvest their proceeds. So if they have their eyes set on another piece of physical property, say in their community, they can list the address of that property and notify their qualified intermediary within those first 45 days. If that's all they do, and later in the process, because you've got a total of 180 days to complete a 1031 exchange, but if later, after day 45, that property that you had your mind set on for some reason falls through, bad inspection, you can't get financing, you just can't come to terms on the purchase, and you have not named a backup property way back there in those first 45 days, your deal falls apart, and the IRS will come in and you'll be liable for capital gains tax and depreciation recapture tax, if it's applicable, on the property that you sold back there on day one. So a DST is a very powerful tool to use as a backup, secondary property in naming where you intend to reinvest your money during those first 45 days. The rules of Section 1031 allow an investor to name up to three separate properties in most circumstances during those first 45 days. So I always advise my clients, even if you intend to invest actively in some other real piece of property, have a backup plan and name one or even two Delaware trusts. Just in case property number one falls through for whatever reason, your money can safely roll into a Delaware trust and still secure the 1031 exchange from taxation.
Okay, so you said name the DST. So that implies there are two DSTs. So that implies that these Delaware statutory trusts, there's a multitude of them. And I would need to know which one to name, wouldn't I? Because I wouldn't just write DST on my 1031 exchange and say my backup's the DST. There's more to it than that, I'm sure. You have to know which that, you want to invest in, yeah. Out the name. How do you find that stuff out? What would you do?
So DSTs are available through advisors or brokers like me. Mm-hmm. My securities license allows me to work with a variety of DST sponsors. Currently, I work with about a half dozen. At any one time, I've got between 12 and 15 different Delaware statutory trusts that are open and available to new investment. So you're correct in that an investor, a 1031 exchanger, has to sit down with someone like myself, look at the available open trusts, and find out which one or which couple of them best suit their needs and their goals. And then you simply would notify during that first 45 days as a plan B or a backup, I intend to invest in such and such Delaware trust owning property at such and such location. You don't really have to get too specific, but all Delaware trusts have a name. They identify where their property under trust is located. And it's a matter of the investor simply choosing the one or two different trust options that they wish to identify that appeal to them the most.
Okay. So then if I wanted to move from single family to commercial, because I felt commercial was going to take off, then I would want to find a trust that has a lot of commercial holdings. And they break down the assets, I assume, in that manner.
That's correct. Most Delaware trusts hold similar classes of real estate assets. For example, there could be a trust that owns only multifamily residential property, or there could be a trust that owns only commercial, industrial, or self-storage real estate.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, you touched on another, I think, benefit of a Delaware trust is it gives a real estate investor the opportunity to own passively a class of real estate that they simply may not have any expertise in, but that they want that additional diversification. So if an investor has owned apartment buildings for a long period of time, they know apartment buildings. But if they want to diversify and have some of their real estate holdings in senior living or self-storage or commercial office, a Delaware trust is a great way to diversify your real estate holdings in a passive way, relying on the expertise and the management of the trust sponsor.
Well, what's the return like on these things on average? I mean, if I put in, you know, $1 million, well, what would I expect to give out? Is it cash flow that comes back out to me on a monthly basis, quarterly basis?
That's right. Delaware statutory trusts are similar somewhat to REITs. We talked about REITs a while ago. Mm-hmm. A Delaware trust operates in a way similar to a REIT in that the sponsor must, by law, distribute 90% of their net operating cash flow back out to their shareholders or their investors. So the investors are going to receive a monthly income at an annual rate. Rates vary and they vary from year to year depending on prevailing conditions, but the investors will receive both a monthly distribution and the potential for appreciation because what they own is a fractional passive interest in underlying real property if that property appreciates in its particular market. And at some point in the future, the sponsor decides it's time to sell the property, they also will distribute the pro rata share of the appreciation back to each individual investor.
Well, does that screw up my 1031? Because if they sell it, then, if I did a 1031 a piece of property and I later sold it, then it'd all be taxable to me.
Investors in a Delaware statutory trust do have the opportunity to 1031 out of a trust at the time that the trust liquidates, or at the time that the sponsor determines that they're ready to move to sell the underlying real estate. So the investors in the trust will receive ample notification from the sponsor that the property is being sold. And when I say ample, I mean ample time to then decide if they want to set up another 1031 exchange, because a passive ownership in a DST constitutes property and can be sold under Section 1031. So once they're notified by the sponsor that it's time to sell the property, they'll have the option to either tax defer, swap it again under Section 1031, or take their gains and incur the tax liability.
Wow, this is fascinating. You know, it's bringing up more questions for me, and we're going to run. Can you stick with me just for one more segment? Would that work?
Sure can.
Okay, so let's take another quick break, and then we'll come back, and I got a few more questions I want to tie down on this, especially about, you know, liquidity of the investment and if they didn't sell all the assets. All right, we'll come right back.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
Welcome back, everyone. If you just joined us at the Anderson Podcast, today we are talking to Scott Hendricks about Delaware statutory trust. And right before the break, we were discussing how the actual trust works if they sell assets, how you can take the money, the proceeds, and then roll those proceeds into another 1031 exchange. So if you want to keep deferring the tax. But as Scott was explaining it, something came up that I just have to ask you, Scott. What happens if the trust owned three buildings and then the trustee decided, well, market conditions here in Atlanta, they don't appear to be favorable over the near term, so we're going to sell it. And now they sold a third of the assets. So now I have only a third of my investment. What do I do? Just 1031 that third then? So I don't have to pay tax on? Is that how that would play out?
You could, Clint. I'll tell you, in my experience, that is a less common situation. As I said earlier, a Delaware trust could either own a single property or it could own multiple properties. So certainly there would be the possibility of a situation where the sponsor of the trust may decide it's time to sell one of the properties, but not necessarily the others or the other one. And the shareholders, the investors, would receive notification that that percentage of their original investment is being sold. And because you can do a 1031 out of a Delaware trust, that would be considered a partial liquidity event. The investors could then decide to do another 1031 on that portion of their investment that's being liquidated, or they could also decide, well, I'm ready to take the cash and simply incur the proportionate capital gain tax liability on that liquidated piece of the Delaware trust. I haven't seen that happen a whole lot. Most of the sponsors seek to liquidate their entire portfolio at one time. But of course, you never know with real estate market conditions.
Sure. Well, what about if I'm thinking if I bought real estate on a 1031 exchange and I own this building, the one nice aspect of that is if I need cash, I can turn around, list it for sale tomorrow and, you know, close in 90 days and I get paid out and I get all my money out. But how does it work with a Delaware statutory trust? If I get involved in one of these and I roll my money in, let's say I don't want to wait for a liquidity event by the trustee to sell an asset. I want to get out a year from now because my wife tells me it's time for us to take that RV trip and we need the cash to buy an RV. How do I get out of it?
Right. So you've really touched on the biggest limitation or the biggest risk involved with the Delaware statutory trust. Like a lot of real estate, these are considered illiquid. So once you're an investor in a piece of property, whether it's a property that you own outright as the landlord or the property that you own passively as a fractional investor in a Delaware statutory trust, you're in there until a buyer comes along. In the case where you're the landlord, you have the opportunity to find a buyer, and you can do that at any time. In the case of a Delaware statutory trust, because it is a passive investment, you're really at the mercy of the sponsor. And typically, my clients are looking at a 5 to 7 year hold time for an investment in a Delaware statutory trust. I have seen some liquidate earlier than that. I've seen some that are set up to be held for longer than that. But the typical range we're seeing now is about a 5 to 7 year illiquid investment.
Okay. So you know when going into this what the time frame is, that in the Delaware statutory trust, it has language that states that this investment, the expected return or sale date would be 5 years out. And so, you know, you're tying up your money for 5 years if you're getting involved.
That's right. Which, you know, typically when I work with real estate investors, they get that. They get that real estate is a longer term investment than, let's say, you know, stocks or bonds that are traded on an active market every day.
Okay. So when I'm buying into this trust, because you stated that it already holds the property. So if I'm buying in, I'm putting in $500,000 in rollover from the sale of real estate. What is the trustee doing with that money? They're using it to pay down debt, therefore increase cash flow to all the trust members. What happens to that money?
They're using it to operate the property. They're using it to seek additional acquisitions for their next trust portfolio. They're investing it in other real estate holdings that they may own and manage, primarily concerned with generating the cash flow that they're going to need to pay out a distribution. And again, during the long-term hold period, the investors are going to receive a distribution. It's timed to come out every month. So it's a monthly income flow. And in many cases where a Delaware trust owns physical property, a structure, and there's depreciation involved, again, similar to a real estate investment trust or a REIT, some proportion of that depreciation must also be passed through to the investors. So in a lot of cases, they're going to get a distribution, a portion of which is already after tax, increasing their effective rate of return.
Okay. All right. Well, you also mentioned there was two other aspects, how a DST would work with a 1031. And I kind of cut you off and took you down a different road. Do you have a just touch on that real quick here at the end?
Absolutely. So yeah, we talked about a DST as a great backup property to name during that 45-day identification period under Section 1031. A second way that real estate investors find the DST to be useful is with what is called taxable boot. This is what I call the leftover cash, where there's a mismatch between the value of the property being sold and the value of the property that the investor has their eye on that they want to buy. So, for example, an investor sells $1 million property and wants to buy, let's say, $500,000 property somewhere else. That other $500,000 that is left over is going to be a taxable amount unless they find a place to put it. So a Delaware trust, which, by the way, can accept as little as $100,000 under a 1031 exchange, is a great way for investors to park that leftover cash, sometimes relatively small dollar amounts when we're talking real estate, and secure the entire proceeds from their original sale from taxation. It kind of gives you some tools to work with. If you've got, you know, if you've got as little as $117,000.26 from your real estate sale left over that you can't find a home for and would rather not have it taxed, a Delaware trust becomes a great way to slip that money into an investment that's passive and still qualifies as a replacement property for tax deferral purposes.
Sure.
And then the third way that a DST is a great option is simply for the real estate investor who's kind of, you know, done being a landlord. They've owned property for a long time. They've run around and dealt with tenants and plumbers and contractors and building inspectors, and they want to still own real estate, but they don't want to do any of the work anymore. So a Delaware trust comes along as a great way for an investor at that point in their investing career to sell their physical properties under Section 1031 and swap the proceeds 100% into passive real estate. And because there are so many different kinds of Delaware trusts, they have the opportunity to diversify across state lines, across multiple kinds of asset classes, still own real estate, but do it passively. So someone else does all the work of the landlord and then still derive passive income from that kind of portfolio.
Awesome. Well, you know what? This is something that I just find fascinating. As I stated, I'd never heard of this before until you brought it up to me. And I think many of the listeners now, they've been exposed to this, and this is great. So if they wanted to reach out to you to discuss this further, because they're considering doing a 1031 exchange, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I'm out there in the Twitter world. My social media, I have a presence on Twitter under Mr. Scott Hendricks. just MR and then my first and last name. I, of course, am easy to reach by email. I'm assuming you'll post my email or my contact.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is that the way you prefer
So
people to reach you is email?
Email works. My office phone number, I could give that to you or you could post it. Either way is fine.
Okay. So call or email. Well, perfect. I'll put that in the show notes. And we'll have some more information there as well on Delaware Statutory Trust. So, Scott, I want to thank you for taking the time today to come on our podcast. As I stated earlier, I know the listeners are going to receive a wealth of information. I'm still thinking about this. I'm probably going to ask you to come back on because there's a few points we didn't get to when it came to Delaware Statutory Trust that I want to learn more about. So hopefully by, you know, a little later on in the year, we'll get you back on. We'll go into this a little further. So with that, Scott, thank you very much for coming on today. And I wish you the very best.
Likewise, Clint. I appreciate your time and I'm happy to be a resource to you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.